Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Charlene Lee is the founder of Altimeter Group and co-author of the critically acclaimed best-selling book, Groundswell. She is one of the foremost experts on social media and technologies and a consultant on leadership, strategy, social technologies, interactive media, and marketing. Charlene was named one of the 12 most creative minds of the 2008 Fast Company magazine poll, and she's one of the most influential women in technology in 2009. She's written a new book, Open Leadership, How Social Technology Can Transform the Way You Lead. Charlene, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Your book is called Open Leadership. What does that mean?
I define it as having the confidence and the humility to give up the need to be in control while still inspiring commitment from people to achieve a goal. I'm very careful to word it as the need to give up control. I think one of the new rules of open leadership is that you have to recognize that you aren't in control of the relationship with your customers, with your employees.
Right.
The second part, though, is how do you actually get things done then? Because you can't make people buy a product. You can't make people do things. You can only inspire them to do it. How do you actually do that? How do you actually structure openness so that you can achieve a goal?
All right. Why is this book needed right now?
Something's happened over the past 2 years that we've never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
Because these social technologies allow people to share almost instantaneously and constantly. That has really opened up a new type of relationship between people and companies, and people and their leaders. This level of sharing has changed relationships, and leadership is based on relationships. So if relationships have changed, leadership needs to change too.
Is developing a collaborative leadership style part of the new social technology?
Yes, and I think people's expectations have changed in the same way that I didn't expect to know a lot about you before coming to meet you. But I can go and read blogs, I can read tweets, I can read what other people are doing here at conferences. There are so many things that provide greater context now for the relationship to take place.
Right.
And if you're on one side of that table and you're not prepared with that same knowledge, there's an imbalance when you come in. It's very unsettling when the other person you are trying to lead knows more about what's going on than you do.
Well, that's true. And what response do you get from people about the book?
I get two types of responses. If they've been pushing for greater openness and adoption, especially of these technologies, they love the book, they hug it, and they buy 10 copies and give it to their executive team.
Right.
Because they think if they could learn the same language, same approach, it'll help them move the company forward. I also hear from the people who receive the book. These are the people who always looked askance at these social technologies and said, that's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to pay attention to it. In fact, I fear it. I'm going to put off for as long as possible having to get onto Facebook. When they read the book, they realize I shouldn't have to fear this anymore. In fact, if I want to be an effective leader to develop the relationships, I'm going to have to embrace this.
Absolutely.
The most gratifying are people who say, I used to fear this and now I want to embrace it.
Now, in the book, you have a number of fascinating case studies of companies that did embrace it and have since had tremendous success as organizations. Are there certain leaders within an organization that should be reading this book?
I think the automatic assumption is that this is written for CEOs. That's one part of the audience, but it's for anybody who is in a leadership position.
Right.
And that is across the organization. You can be a team leader. You could be in HR, leading the strategy, how to hire people, how to manage them. You could be in customer service, where the levels of service are changing because of the levels of interactions that people are expecting from companies. So wherever you are in a relationship or trying to reach an audience in particular, where those relationships are changing, I think you could use the book.
I would think that managers would find this book extremely helpful because it's going to improve their position within the organization.
Right. The book can provide some structure, especially if you're starting to feel out of control, feeling threatened by all these new relationships, new technologies, and trying to make sense of it. I think the book can help you to ask the right questions so that you can get to the answers. Because right now, so many people say, when somebody comes to me and says, I need to have a Twitter account, what do I say to them? What are the questions I need to ask? How do I go through that decision-making process? What does it mean to have a Twitter account? There are enough toolkits and action steps and checklists to help you think about all these new technologies and the things that people are trying to do with them.
Now, in the book, you suggest that open leadership is a rigorous approach to strategy and leadership. It's not just words.
No, and I think you actually have to define what openness means.
Can you give us some examples?
Yes, the second chapter of the book looks at 10 different ways you can understand openness.
Mm-hmm.
Openness in terms of the information you as a leader share with people mm-hmm. internally. Openness in terms of the information coming from the outside. And how do you use it inside the organization, the platforms, the decision-making process? So I think a really good starting point is to understand how open you are. How do you share information? When do you share it? Who do you share it with?
Exactly.
Let's just take financial reporting. How much detail do you give? How often do you give it? Do you abide by open book management philosophies? And I think the new way of thinking about this is that it's no longer just a quarterly report or annual meeting where mm-hmm. you open up the books. You may actually make the entire financial system open and available. You don't have to share the salary information of people, but if people want to understand the operating KPIs and it become just that little bit more efficient because they understand the financial workings of the company, that may be worth it.
And once they understand what it entails, they can better understand the benefits from doing it.
Exactly. And it's really about the explaining nature of openness. When you explain things to people, if they can understand it, you get buy-in. They can be more vested, if you want to put it in quantitative terms, just 3% more bought in mm-hmm. than your strategic goal because they understand why you're doing it. 3% increase in productivity is huge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All you have to do is communicate with people in a more open way. That's a pretty interesting proposition.
So it seems with open leadership, you're going to tremendously improve the quality of strategy execution.
Right. Primarily because instead of having a strategy document that just sits there, the executives can say, here's our strategy. Let me show you how we're living it. And let me show you how people at the front lines, at middle management levels, are living it too.
Right.
You can call out and recognize people on a constant basis. You don't have to wait till the quarterly meeting. You can do it every single day. You can share a client meeting you just had that was incredibly telling about moving forward. Mm-hmm. This is effectiveness. So instead of wondering, well, what does the CEO think about this? Well, what does my manager think about this? Or I wonder what's going on in that executive board meeting. Is it going to impact me or not?
Hmm.
Well, what if you laid it out? In the past, the reason you couldn't lay it out was just the cost of communication was so high. But now the cost of sharing is so low.
Yeah.
If I can hold a flip camera and actually record myself having stepped out of a client meeting, like, you know, I just had this fantastic meeting and this is how we're adding value and making a difference for this client. That excitement can be shared with the entire organization.
It's interesting that it's not only sharing down, but sharing up. Questions are being asked of leaders and answers are being given so that a person comes away with real knowledge of what the next steps are.
Yes, and I think the sharing up is just as effective because the leaders wonder, well, I'm saying things, is it resonating with anybody? Does anybody believe this? Did they hear me?
Right.
For you to get validation as a leader, mm-hmm. confirmation that things are getting done, is so gratifying. And I say it here and it echoes over there. And more importantly, you can give those sharing tools to the mm-hmm. people at the front lines and the middle managers so that they can now reinforce that strategy with everyone else. So it's not just you talking about it anymore. It's spreading throughout the organization.
And it's also outside of the organization because you're going to customers and vendors and everybody that you're doing business with.
Right. And you can choose when you want to be open to mm-hmm. people outside. But I like the way Facebook approaches openness. Their default is open. Everything is shared. And you have to make the case for why it isn't going to be shared.
Right.
And there are some very good reasons why. For example, if you're negotiating a lease for a new headquarters, you probably don't want to share that.
Of course.
You lose your negotiation position. Let's talk about pending IPOs. Probably shouldn't be talking about it for legal reasons and financial reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think there are any risks associated with open leadership?
All sorts of risks. Just talk about information sharing. You run the risk that people with sensitive information will share it.
Right.
How do you mitigate that risk? You tell people what the consequences are, that sharing will decrease if people's trusts are broken. You talk about responsibilities, guidelines, and processes. I think with information, with power comes tremendous responsibility too.
Exactly.
If we're going to enter into this promise that I'm going to give you the information, the power, and responsibility, you will act responsibly.
Absolutely. That's the case, particularly in terms of strategic thinking, because an open strategy could be accessible to people outside the company who could use it to their own advantage.
Right. But I'll give an example.
Okay.
Starbucks. There's this place where they share all these new ideas from customers called mystarbucksidea.com. Mm-hmm. Pete's Coffee, Dunkin' Donuts, everybody can see what those ideas are. It's completely public. Starbucks says, I have more to gain because I have a better process internally to be able to take those ideas and follow up with them. These ideas are sometimes very specific to Starbucks, and sure, they could do it too, but we have really invested in this relationship with our customers in a way that they haven't. So maybe we are increasing visibility into what's happening here, but we could never get better without that from the interaction with our customers. So it's a trade-off.
Got it. But do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yes. In these cases, the ideas are pretty basic. Things like, I really want automatic ordering of my coffee drink because I just drink plain old coffee.
Okay.
So I just want to swipe my loyalty card, walk in, get my coffee, walk out the door without ever talking to anybody. Mm-hmm. They went through and looked at this. A CIO chimed in. The person in charge of the stores were talking about how they could do it, couldn't do it. In the end, they decided they couldn't do this because the store reconfiguration would be too much of a pain. And so 3,500 people had voted for it. 350 people had commented on it. Very popular idea. In the end, couldn't do it. But the relationship is stronger now.
Now, in the book, you also talk about building open leaders within an organization. How do you select people? Is every person who leads a group or department suitable to learn this type of skill?
Anybody can practice open leadership. I think there are certain people with certain mindsets that have greater predisposition towards it.
For instance?
There are two types of mindsets. One is whether you're pessimistic or optimistic about what people do with power and responsibility. And that's really ingrained. It's really hard to change someone's mindset. The second one is whether they tend to be more collaborative or independent in their approach to solving problems. Now, all of us tend to be collaborative to some degree. All of us tend to be individualistic because we do work on our own. It's more about where you see your source of strength. So do you tend to go to yourself as the key problem solver? Or do you say, I could solve this, but I think more heads are better than just my one.
Right.
These are all different levels of scale. So somebody who's very pessimistic about what happens when people get power and also very individualistic, basically senior executives because they've been burned, they got someplace because of themselves. I call worried skeptics because anytime something around openness comes, they get very worried about it. And they're very skeptical about what the outcome could be. Mm-hmm. So they have a hard time being open because it's not in their nature. They can recognize, though, it's extremely important to be open. And that is the keynote. If they understand from a strategic point of view why the organization needs to be open, what the benefits are, how they can manage the risk, they will invest the time to develop different skills and behaviors of being an open leader. But ask them to be an open leader naturally, it's just not in their DNA.
Of course not.
Take the polar opposite, somebody who's optimistic and collaborative. I call these the realist optimists. They understand what can happen, but they also understand the barriers internally and have the collaborative skills to be able to bridge that. The realist optimist is the linchpin inside an organization. If you're trying to do the cultural change to make open leadership happen, they're the ones who can be the gel that holds everyone together.
Hmm. It seems to be that given the technology and the world we're moving in, open leadership is inevitable. And whether we want to or not, most leaders will have to accept some version of this.
Yes, I do believe so. And some leaders will counter, I'm in the B2B space. None of my customers use these tools and I don't have to worry about it, right? Can I just ignore it? Frankly, yes. If nobody is using these things, you may not need to be open that way. But I can guarantee you, if you're in a large organization, somebody internally is probably using it. And that relationship is changing. So you need to be aware of this. For you to completely ignore it and not consider how openness can help your business is a real mistake. You put your company and yourself in peril.
Right.
So at least take a look at this. Look at where openness could potentially help and decide not to be open because it's not the right thing. Decide how open you will be, how closed you will be, given your strategic goals and given where your customers are today and where your employees are. But to not even go through that exercise, I think it's just foolhardy.
Well, I think you're right. What about corporate culture? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Culture is the underlying context for greater openness.
Yeah.
But how do you create a more open culture? I think all cultures are open to some degree. The question becomes, do you want to change that culture? How changeable is it? if you want to achieve some very, very tough strategic goals. There's always this question, here's the marketplace, not much you can change about it. Here's your position in the marketplace. If you want to change your position in the marketplace, that is your strategy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you have the culture to be able to execute on that? And if you don't have the right culture, the right level of openness to have the new relationships, to be able to tackle them and use them to your advantage, you're going to be at a disadvantage mm-hmm. in the marketplace.
Charlene, what are some of the characteristics, skills, and behaviors you might need to develop? Can you talk to us about some of those?
Let's talk about characteristics.
Okay.
There are having confidence. That's just something that comes with practice. But curiosity is something mm-hmm. all the open leaders have. And interestingly, all said, I am constantly curious, constantly feel like I have something to learn. And the flip side of that is humility. They have the humility to say, I make mistakes all the time. I have a lot to learn from the people around me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about skills and behaviors?
In terms of skills and behaviors, mm-hmm. one of them is practicing authenticity. Everyone is authentic all the time, but how do you get perceived to be authentic? And that comes through lots of iterations. It is carrying through on what you say, because you're authentic when you say, I really strongly believe this, and uh-huh. you can demonstrate it in your actions. But it's actually saying it over and over again. And that comes through a lot of sharing.
Right.
Executives and leaders really have to get good at creating this culture of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't used to sharing.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And how about sharing with us some names of executives who you think are skilled open leaders?
I think Barry Judge, who's a CMO of Best Buy, really supportive of a lot of the initiatives they had internally from the very beginning. Social media people early on kept saying to him, you know, you should get a blog. And he says, I'm not a blogger. I'm the CMO. I mm-hmm. run the campaigns. I don't do the talking myself. They finally talked him into it, and he wrote his first blog post, which was all of something like 10 words. It said something like, this is my first blog post. So glad it's over. From there, he went on to really find his voice. It took him a little while, but once he found it, there's been no stopping him. He's now constantly on Twitter. He's developed new relationships with people, the customers directly, developed trust, figured out a way to actually use these new tools to test mm-hmm. marketing campaigns, be much more open about the selection of agencies, for example. And he's found it to be a great way to do his job better because of the new relationships he has.
Well, it goes without saying that these new tools are all very marketing oriented, certainly the social media that allow you to find out what your customers think, how you can improve services, quality of product. But a lot of people don't think about the value of social media in terms of interrelationships with their employees.
Right. And I think the other example of an open leader is John Chambers, CEO of Cisco.
Why is that?
When he came into Cisco, he realized in order to grow the company, especially with acquisitions, which is the way they've structured themselves, in order to gel everyone together, they had to really work on communications and collaboration.
That's interesting.
They've really embarked on a journey to transform the entire organization towards open mm-hmm. leadership. They've created all these councils and boards, very complex organizations to do all the decision-making. They're usually headed by two people, sometimes from sales and engineering, so they can all agree that if we're going to move forward with this strategic decision, everyone's bought into it.
Uh-huh, sure.
That takes more time, but you can do a lot more if it's very distributed.
Okay, so what are the benefits of an open leadership model?
The interesting thing is all the things they were able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And John Chambers said, I'm working less than I did 2 years ago. The thing that he talks about that enabled them to do this, especially over the past 2 years, are these new collaborative tools, the communication tools internally that allow mm-hmm. them to share information, because you can't make decisions unless everybody has the information to be able to make those decisions. You also need to be able to document the decision-making process so that everyone understands all the steps that got us from A to B. And if there are any questions about whether we should move on to C, you have it all documented.
Sure.
So instead of having to be in a certain room together at the same time, it's a highly iterative process across the world, across time zones, across different departments. And they could never have done this 3 years ago because the tools weren't there to allow all that free flow of information.
Charlene, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The biggest reason why I wrote this book was people were talking about social technologies, and yet they were talking about how they had a hard time giving up control. And the subtext of that was, if I give up control, I'm liable to fail. And underpinning that is, I can't afford to fail.
So what advice can you offer them?
Relationships you have to recognize are never perfect. To be an effective leader moving forward, if it's truly built on relationships, You have to be prepared to deal with failure, to recover from failure and have resilience with failure, because you cannot succeed unless you can take risks. The best leaders are the ones who will encourage risk, structured risk taking, know what you're getting into it, but take risks. Because if you have the trust of the people around you to take those risks, then you'll take bigger risks and move your business forward faster.
I'd like to thank our guest today, Charlene Lee, author of a new book, Open Leadership, How Social Technology Can Transform the Way You Lead. Charlene, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.